Okay, so before I start, I would like to thank many people with whom I had pleasure to collaborate over the years on these topics and whose contribution to this project is absolutely essential. So my talk is, our study is motivated by observations, by recent observations in the solar wind, where magnetic density and sometimes electric fluctuations could be measured over impressive range of scales. So, and I will just show a couple examples. So those are fluctuations of magnetic and velocity fields in the solar wind. So this is a power fluctuation. This is a frequency, spacecraft frequency, which is essentially the wave number of the fluctuations. So the solar wind flows with very high velocity with respect to the satellite position. Therefore, the frequency here is basically dominated by the Doppler shift, wave vector multiplied by the solar wind velocity. So when we plot spectrum versus the frequency, it essentially means that we use Taylor hypothesis that those fluctuations do not evolve on the time, on the very short time when the solar wind passes by the satellite. So, and even here, so at this large scales where we believe that fluctuations can be explained using hydrodynamics or magnetohydrodynamics description, we already see some problems. So velocity fluctuations slightly deviate from magnetic fluctuations. And this deviation is essential. It's measurable. It's confirmed in observations. And of course, if we assume that those are Alvenic fluctuations, velocity and magnetic fluctuations should be exactly the same. So now, even more surprises we have if, as we go to smaller scales probably smaller than the ion gyro scale. So where spectrum here changes, and before, say, yeah?
For the uninitiated, like myself, what and where are you measuring when, which, I don't
understand what you're doing. Okay, so you have a satellite, so those are, solar wind is blowing and carrying with itself magnetic and velocity fluctuations. So you measure those fluctuations as function of time. Then you do Fourier transform in time and get, it's a, oh, so different. So those results, I believe, are at 1 AU. So it's about Earth's location. 1 AU, one astronomical unit from the sun. So this is one astronomical unit close to the position of the Earth. So, but of course, satellites can fly closer to the sun or maybe a few astronomical units, so you can vary the distance. But this picture is pretty much the same in all these distances from the sun. So those are magnetic fluctuations in red, velocity fluctuations in blue, as a spectrum of those fluctuations in frequency, in terms of frequency. Okay, so this is basically Fourier spectrum of fluctuations in wave number. So now, as we look at smaller scales at high frequencies, we see the break in those spectra, in this case, magnetic field and density fluctuations. And before, let's say 10 years ago, people would say that, or maybe even 5 years ago, people would say that the break happens because energy actually is dissipated by some mechanism here. Those scales here are comparable to the ion gyro scales. But recent measurements show that in this spectrum, actually those fluctuations are not damped here. The spectrum continues and has something like power and looks like a power law, even at scales smaller than ion gyro scale. So this energy somehow goes to smaller scales. It's not dissipated by ions. It goes probably all the way up to the electron gyro scale. Now, I would like to describe these two regions separately. So fluctuations here indeed can be described to kind of quite well in the magnetohydrodynamic framework. But fluctuations here require kinetic description. So one can also formulate some reduced fluid models, but those fluctuations are probably dominated by kinetic Alvian modes or Whistler modes. And I will describe them separately, those two regions separately. So first of all, just a few slides introduction to MHD turbulence. So if we consider fluid turbulence, turbulence of non-conducting fluid, so such turbulence does not have internal waves. So any perturbation which we can consider in such a fluid would be strongly nonlinear. However, if we have a conducting fluid and we impose a large external magnetic field, such a medium becomes transparent to different waves. And most important here are Alvenic waves, Alvian waves, which can propagate along the background magnetic field in the opposite directions without, so if it's just an ideal Alvenic wave, it won't change its shape. It will just propagate up or down along the background magnetic field. So when those two waves collide or overlap, you have nonlinear interaction and you have turbulence. You have cascade over scales. And you have redistribution of energy over scales. So what is the nature of this large-scale magnetic field? Well, it can be either imposed by large-scale by some external sources, as for example, in laboratory devices, or it can be created by large-scale eddies. So small-scale fluctuations are field magnetic field, almost uniform magnetic field, which is created by large-scale fluctuations, large-scale eddies. So large-scale magnetic field is absolutely essential for small-scale fluctuations. It mediates turbulent cascade, turbulent interaction at small scales. It cannot be removed. So large-scale velocity field is not essential. It can be removed by going to a different inertial, different reference frame. Large-scale magnetic field cannot be removed. And in fact, there are discussions whether this large-scale magnetic field, whether the presence of large-scale magnetic field leads to some non-locality of interaction, some interaction of large scales and small scales. But this series of turbulence, both weak and strong turbulence, actually assume or have quite good reasons to believe that large-scale magnetic field simply mediates energy cascade at small scales, but does not lead to non-locality. So now, just a few slides with formulas. So those are equation, momentum equation and the induction equation in magnetohydrodynamics. So those equations can be rewritten in a nice and symmetric fashion if you consider linear combinations of velocity and magnetic fluctuations. They're some and they're different. Then these equations take very nice and symmetric form. So the so-called Elsasser form. And from these equations, one can see that if, for example, z minus is 0, then there is an Alvenic perturbation, z plus, which propagates along the background magnetic field in one direction. If z plus is 0, but z minus is non-zero, it propagates in the opposite direction. So there are two types of Alvenic waves moving in the opposite direction along the background magnetic field. So you have nonlinear interaction only when these two wave packets overlap, and then you have energy redistribution over scales. Incompressible flow, right. Incompressible flow. Right, right. But it turns out that if you compare density fluctuations with magnetic fluctuations in the solar wind, density fluctuations energy is about 10 times smaller than magnetic fluctuations. So it's believed that it's indeed governed by incompressible Alvenic cascade. And density fluctuations act as a passive scalar in this Alvenic cascade. So but even if you consider compressible fluid and consider shear Alvian modes, they are incompressible. So maybe that's why density fluctuations are so low. So at large, it depends on, so at large scales, Mach number can be on the order of one. So yeah. So at small scales, those waves are basically shuffling magnetic field lines. They do not compress the medium. So at small scales, you have only so some other modes. You have, say, pseudo-Alvian mode, which is in this case would be compressible. But this mode would not couple. It's a little bit. I will have to, you know, it's not simple explanation. But this mode has a polarization such that it doesn't couple. It doesn't couple to Shear-Alvian mode. So this mode will also be passively advected by Shear-Alvian modes. It won't react back. So I can explain it more later, but it will cause me to, you know, to deviate a little bit. Yeah, so Shear-Alvian modes are most important in this cascade. Pseudo-Alvian modes are passively advected. Say their polarization is such that they do not react back on the Shear-Alvian modes. So it's comparable. So plasma beta is here at 1 AU is of order of 1. So thermal velocity is comparable to the Alvenic velocity. But those fluctuations are such that density perturbations are quite weak in this turbulence.
Is that because it's all driven by the field lines being jiggled at one end?
So field lines are shuffling. So Alvian modes shuffle field lines. They don't compress the medium. So in cascade, proceeds in the direction larger and larger perpendicular wave number. So you shuffle more and more magnetic field lines at small scales. But you compress them less and less. So when I say about Mach number, I just compare large-scale fluctuations. At small-scale fluctuations, velocity becomes smaller and smaller. So if you compare fluctuations, these tiny fluctuations, they will be very subsonic, the small scale fluctuations. But at large scales, Mach number is one. No, velocity in the perpendicular, fluctuating velocity in the perpendicular direction, yeah. It's shell when modes. So basically, you shuffle the magnetic field lines, but you don't stretch them. Wind velocity is very large. It's much, much larger than any of those. It just advects all those fluctuations with it. So it doesn't matter. It can be. So in some instances, magnetic field is alone the velocity. In some instances, it's normal to the velocity. So, but it doesn't matter here. Okay, so and this what basically, so these equations written in Ilsasser form have two conserved quantities if we neglect forcing and dissipation, which are Ilsasser energies. Energy of Z plus is conserved and energy of Z minus is conserved, but those are actually energy, total energy, magnetic and kinetic, and so-called cross-helicity. So those are two invariants of ideal MHD, energy and cross-helicity, but they can be written in this form. Now, so you have these wave packets which move in the opposite directions. When they overlap, you have nonlinear interaction, and turbulence can be either balanced or imbalanced. So if the energies in both waves are comparable, turbulence is balanced. If they're different, it's imbalanced. So in the solar wind, it's mostly imbalanced because you have more organic modes moving out of the sun than towards the sun. So for this picture, I neglect dissipation and neglect forcing, so to show this picture. I don't show the direction of the magnetic field here. It's just basically, yeah, so it's Z plus would be up, so it's going to move in the direction along the magnetic field. So if magnetic field is in this direction, it's going to move in the direction along the magnetic field, right? No, in the opposite direction, right. So I didn't show the direction here, yeah, so same magnetic field is in this direction. Yeah, I just wanted to illustrate that they move in the opposite direction. That's important. Now, this is just little illustration what really happens here. So we have these two wave packets which have different polarizations. Initially, they have only small wave numbers, so they're very smooth wave packets. Now, when they interact, they create a lot of small-scale structures. And when you look at this interaction at some time instance, you will see a lot of small-scale structures develop during this interaction, as a result of this interaction. So once again, so they start to interact only when they overlap. Now, then strength of interaction, you can consider either weak or strong turbulence depending on the relative strengths of linear and nonlinear terms in this equation. So linear term can be estimated as just LVN frequency k parallel VLVN multiplied by this fluctuation, and nonlinear term can be estimated like Z. So when linear term is much larger than the nonlinear term, turbulence is weak. When they're comparable, turbulence is strong. So first I will start with weak turbulence and then show that even in the case of weak turbulence, where one can develop nice mathematical theory, you have some paradoxes and some unanswered questions. So now we have weak turbulence. So we have organic wave packets which can interact with each other, and three wave interactions dominate here. So two Alvian waves can coalesce and create third Alvian wave. So an energy should be conserved and momentum should be conserved. So if you would like, you can multiply those equations by h bar. It will be just conservation of energy and momentum in these three wave interactions. Now, if you would like, if you substitute this Alvianic dispersion relation to these equations, you would see that the solution would require either k1z equal to 0 or k2z equal to 0. So one of those modes should have very low frequency, actually ideally zero frequency for them to interact. And therefore, yeah. Which what? So suppose z is along the magnetic field, right? So if you solve these equations, you will see that the only non-trivial solution is when either kz is equal to 0 or k1z or k2z is equal to 0. Meaning that when those two modes interact, the z wave number cannot change and only k perp can change during the interaction. So if you have any energy cascade, it should proceed in the direction of k perp, in the direction normal to the background magnetic field, not along the magnetic field. That's why I'm saying that those fluctuations actually shuffle magnetic field lines. You create smaller and smaller structures in the direction normal to the magnetic field, not in the perpendicular direction. So now you can proceed exactly as one proceeds in the theory of weak turbulence. One can assume that without the interaction, you have random waves, Z plus and Z minus, which are not correlated. But when you switch on a small interaction, energies contained in E plus and E minus start to slowly change in time. And yesterday, Sergei Nazarenko gave a nice overview of weak turbulence theory. So it's basically the same methods here. So now one can write the equation for E plus and E minus. So basically, you take this equation, multiply by Z plus, average. Then second order moment will be expressed for the third order moment. Then you write the equation for the third order moment. It will express for the fourth order moments. You split fourth order moments using Gaussian rule or Wick's rule and into pairwise correlation functions. And as a result, you have some equation for the evolution of epsilon plus and epsilon minus energies. If you want, those are, say, kinetic equation where this is the function which tells you how much the distribution of energy over wave numbers, and this is a collision integral. It tells you how this energy changes when those waves collide with each other, right? So steady-state solution can be obtained if we assume that collision integral is equal to zero. So if you have Boltzmann integral, of course, you will have a Gaussian distribution, but in this case, the distribution is a power law. So in fact, if you assume that E plus is equal to E minus, then this is the solution. It's energy scales as K per to the minus 3, and if in the spectrum, we multiply by the volume element, this is a customary thing to do, so 2 pi k per, it's k per to the minus 2. So spectrum of weak Alvian turbulence is k per to the minus 2. Now, in numerical simulations, indeed, confirm this picture. So we did this numerical simulations with Jean Perez. Indeed, if Z plus and Z minus are the same, the energy spectrum is very close to k per to the minus 2. Now, what happens now if the fluxes of E plus and E minus are not equal? If we have situation close to the real situation, say in the solar wind, when we have more waves moving in one direction than in the other direction, what happens in this case? Well, one can still solve this equation. One can find which solutions will nullify this collision integral. And then there is the following. One spectrum can be a little bit steeper. The other one somewhat steeper. The other spectrum can be shallower with this parameter alpha, which is between minus 1 and 1. And the question is how to choose this alpha. Well, the answer is very simple. If the energy fluxes are given, if epsilon plus and epsilon minus are given, the ratio defines alpha. So there is this function, which is known, and you can find alpha. Right? So basically, if you have the imbalance cascade, there is more energy in epsilon plus compared to the spectrum of E plus is steeper, say, than the spectrum of E minus, if cascade is imbalanced. Right, it denotes by large scale where you supply the energy. Yeah, where supplies the energy. Yeah, by k naught. It's large. K perp is large, much larger than the scale where you much larger than k where you supply the energy. Right. Now, so one can do numerical simulations and try to check it. So these are numerical simulations for the balance case. Spectrum is minus 2. Those are numerical simulations for the imbalance case. We supply more energy to E plus and less energy to E minus per unit time. And those are the spectra compensated by K per to the minus 2. And we found an interesting thing that as you change the Reynolds number, as you change the dissipation, the slopes change. You see the slopes different for those spectra. So you would expect the slopes will be defined only by the energy supply, but they change as you change the Reynolds number. So how to explain that? So we started to look at these equations again, and this is the answer that we proposed. So if you look at those equations, how this closure is done in weak turbulence theory, so there is energy associated with Z plus, energy associated with Z minus, and there is some third correlation function because you have two fields, you should have three correlation functions for those fields, but this correlation function was assumed to be zero in this theory, and this function is related to the difference between magnetic and velocity energies. If you recall what I said before, so it's very slight difference in solar wind. So how would one would take into account this correlation function? Well, we can just write the equation for this correlation function. And we find out that even if this correlation function is zero initially, fluctuations of E plus and E minus will produce non-zero residual energy, non-zero correlation of Z plus and Z minus. Moreover, it's interesting that this force, this term which produces this mismatch between magnetic and kinetic energy, is sign definite. It's always negative, meaning that magnetic energy always dominates the kinetic energy in this turbulent cascade. So this is a result from weak turbulence theory, but it turns out that it also holds in strong turbulence theory. One can just measure difference between magnetic and kinetic energy, and indeed there is difference. They're not the same in strong strong energy turbulence. So it's hard to say what's really happening here. So it's maybe it's related to fluctuations of magnetic helicity, which somehow cascades to large scales. But anyway, so those are results of numerical simulations in weak turbulence. Indeed, we see that this mismatch between magnetic and kinetic energy builds up at small k parallel, because it's just shows that this is a solution for this function. So we have, in this case, we have MHD equations where we leave only Shi-Alvin mode. We remove pseudo-Alvin mode, which has a different polarization. So we force those fluctuations at large scales. If you have a periodic box at the box size, we force Z plus and Z minus independently, because we want to consider balance or imbalance case. And we supply specified amount of energy per unit time in Z plus and Z minus. That's how it's forced. So I can explain more about this setup, if we have time later. So, and this residual energy is built up at very small k parallel. So here is the inertial interval at very small k parallel, meaning that weak MHD turbulence spontaneously creates long-lived large-scale structures with very small k parallel and very large k perp, like a grating, like a diffraction grating, which is uniform in one direction and changes very fast in the perpendicular direction. And all the waves actually scatter of this grating. So it's really essential to understand what happens at this large scales at small k parallel to understand the behavior of turbulence itself. So so it's a question how to describe this condensate. We call it condensate because it's essentially strongly nonlinear object. So you cannot write a simple equation for this condensate. But now, going back to the observations in the solar wind, we did see this difference between magnetic and kinetic energy. And it turns out that if you do numerical simulations of MHD turbulence, you measure how this mismatch between the energy scale in these numerical simulations, it matches very well the scaling observed in the solar wind. So this effect is indeed present in the solar wind. This effect is related to buildup of the condensate of excessive magnetic fluctuations over kinetic fluctuations at large scales along the magnetic field line. And it's present in both numerical simulations and it's observed in the solar wind. It's at all scales, but the mismatch goes down faster than the spectra themselves. So the probably most obvious reason is that turbulence create patches, imbalanced patches, where this, even if you have overall balanced turbulence, it creates imbalanced patches, which are non-symmetrically, non-mirror invariant. And if they're non-mirror invariant, they can generate inverse cascade of magnetic helicity to large scales. Maybe that's how you build up magnetic field at large scales. Now, okay, so we described this spectrum. It turns out that we understand a lot about these fluctuations from both numerical simulations and analytic treatment. But now what happens to small fluctuations? The fluctuations are much smaller than the Zion-Jarre scale, and I have maybe 5 to 10 minutes to discuss this. 5 minutes, okay. So now what modes? Let's start from the linear case. What modes exist at scales smaller than ion gyro scale in a plasma where plasma beta is equal to 1, meaning that thermal energy is thermal velocity is comparable to Alvenic velocity, and electron temperature is comparable to the ion temperature. So this is a phase diagram for the plasma modes which can exist in this case. Let's look at the upper case because it's most relevant. So we are considering only those fluctuations here to the right from ion smaller for the scale smaller than the ion gyro scale. So there are two lines in this diagram where Landau damping is very strong. So here, Landau damping by the electrons is very strong. Here, Landau damping by the ions is very strong. So one can show that there are only two electromagnetic modes at such scales, the Whistler modes, which exist here, and the kinetic Alvin modes, which exist there. So at low frequencies, we have kinetic Alvin modes. At high frequencies, we have Whistler modes. And those are essentially different plasma waves, since you cannot continuously go from one wave to the other one. You have to go through the very strong region where the Landau damping is very strong. So this region is a forbidden zone. You cannot cross this line. You cannot continuously go from one mode to the other one. But those two modes have very similar dispersion relations, the scaling of the dispersion relation. If you have oblique whistlers, they scale as frequency scales as k parallel k probe, and kinetic Alvin modes frequency also scales as k parallel k probe. So they have very similar scalings. And in fact, currently there are a lot of discussions in the solar wind community which modes are relevant in this case. And sometimes actually people mix those two modes. They call kinetic Alvin modes whistlers and vice versa. So just to clarify this question, those are two different modes. And before we start the discussion which modes are dominant, we have to really distinguish what we're talking about, kind of specify what we're talking about. So now, what is the physical difference between these two modes? Well, whistler modes are high frequency modes. They are essentially electron modes. So for the whistler modes, ions provide a uniform stationary background, and electrons fluctuate fast on this background. So at each moment, there is a quasi-neutrality. So electron density should be always equal to the ion density. Therefore, those modes are incompressible, since ion provide a uniform background. So whistler modes are incompressible electron modes. Electrons fluctuate, ions are stationary, provide uniform background, and there are no fluctuations of density associated with those modes. Kinetic Alvin modes are essentially compressible modes. Ions and electrons are fluctuating together, and therefore there are strong density fluctuations in the kinetic Alvin modes. So this is how you can distinguish which modes you are dealing with in observations, for example. If you compare the density fluctuations with the magnetic fluctuations in the solar wind, you will see that they are pretty much comparable, meaning that you are dealing with kinetic Alvin modes rather than the whistler modes. If you have whistler modes, they probably provide very small fraction of energy. And this also follows from some phenomenological consideration, because you start with shear Alvin modes here, very low frequency modes. By the time the energy cascade reaches ion gyro radius in the field perpendicular direction, the frequency of these modes is still very small because k parallel is small. So naturally, you would go into the region of kinetic Alvin modes rather than to the region of whistler modes. Okay, now how to describe turbulence at such small scales, this kinetic Alvin turbulence. This is the next slide here. So I will start with the discussion of whistlers, because those modes have similar dispersion relations. But later I will show that exactly mathematically, same equations, very similar equations can be derived for the kinetic Alvin modes itself. So for the whistler modes, those are electron modes. You basically say that you have an induction equation, but the current is given by the electrons. So the velocity here is basically the electron velocity, and which is related to the current. And current is just curl of B. So you just substitute curl of B instead of the velocity field, and you get the nonlinear equation for the magnetic field. This is the electron magnetic hydrodynamics, where the current is just, velocity is just given by the current. Now, this electron magnetic hydrodynamics can be, those equations can be simplified if we assume that we have a very strong uniform background magnetic field. In this case, fluctuations are strongly anisotropic. K parallel is much smaller than K perp. Delta B is much smaller than B naught. And if we use this ordering, we can reduce this system of equations to just two equations for the potential of the perpendicular magnetic field, kind of stream function for the perpendicular magnetic field lines, and the Z component of the magnetic field. So we have the system of two equations for psi and BZ, where the parallel gradient is a gradient along the magnetic field. So the nonlinearity comes through this parallel gradient. This is reduced electron MHD equations. By reduced, we mean that we threw away many terms which are small in this parameter. Okay. Now we can try to look at the equations for the kinetic Alvin waves. Well, for that we use the equations which are derived in plasma with strong background magnetic field by Hazeltine and other people. And so in these equations, if we assume that, if we take into account that we are at subproton scale, so ions follow the electric potential. So I don't want to dwell on the derivation of these equations, but the bottom line is that you have a system of equations which looks like that, which is mathematically identical to the equations for the whistlers. But the parameters, but the variables are different. This is not surprising, because at least in the linear case, they have same dispersion relations. So that's what you would probably expect from these equations. So we have the system of equations. which look mathematically the same. And you can ask, okay, you can start again from the weak turbulence case. Let's analyze weak turbulence using these equations. Well, let's do that. So say weak turbulence of Whistler, so weak turbulence of kinetic Alvin modes, they will look the same. So those are turbulence is governed by three-wave interactions. So there are the three processes. Whistler can decay into two Whistlers, so you know, so different channels of interaction. So you get this three terms in this kinetic equation. So the probability of decay of one Whistler into two Whistlers, or probability of coalescence, has actually been derived almost 40 years ago, more than 40 years ago. It looks like that, so for oblique Whistlers. And one can just look at this equation and try to nullify this right-hand side of this equation. Well, one can just formally, by just counting dimensions, show that this right-hand side is nullified by this equation, by double scaling law, so kz to the power minus 3/2 and kperb to the minus 9/2. When you multiply by the volume, this is the number of waves to get the energy multiplied by the frequency. So then the energy spectrum is kz to the minus 1/2 and kperb to the minus 5/2. This is a spectrum which would correspond to the constant energy flux in this region. However, if you substitute this spectrum back to the kinetic equation, you will see that the integrals diverge on this spectrum. So it's a non-local spectrum. So the spectrum which would correspond to a constant energy flux will diverge at large scales. In this case, it will diverge logarithmically at small k, meaning that this solution cannot be local. Large scales should somehow affect the dynamics at small scales if we would like to stick to the solution which would correspond to constant energy flux. So once again, we have a situation where small-scale fluctuations, you cannot find a local spectrum for small-scale fluctuations, a spectrum of small-scale fluctuations which would be defined by local energy transfer. Somehow large scales are essential here. Now, but one can do numerical simulations of the strong turbulence. So now we do not assume that this is turbulence of waves. We can just apply these equations with some forcing, some dissipation, and consider formally strong turbulence of Whistler, so kinetic Alvin modes. This is a spectrum of this turbulence. The scaling exponent is k to the minus 8/3, which is quite close to what is observed in the solar wind. In solar wind, observations showed minus 2.7, 2.8.
But not the same as
weak turbulence. No, it's going to be steeper than that.
How much?
So weak turbulence, if the spectrum were local, it would give you minus 5/2. But here you get minus 2.7, 2.8. Observation showed 2.7, 2.8. This is also a little bit steeper. So it's still a question why this happens. So if you just use simple dimensional arguments, you will get a spectrum which is minus 7/3, not minus 8/3. But if you have minus 8/3, we're still discussing why this happens. Maybe this inertial interval is not long enough, and somehow dissipation steepens it a little bit. Or maybe there are some intermittency corrections which drive it down. OK, and my conclusions. So weakly interacting. So basically, the goal of my talk was to show that when we study this natural system, solar wind, at both large scales, at small kinetic scales, we encounter some problems, some questions, how to resolve this interaction of small scales and large scales. So it turns out that both spectra are not local. So they somehow interact with large scale organization of the flow. So weakly interacting Alvin modes spontaneously generate a condensate of energy, real and residual, at large scales along the magnetic field lines. It's non-zero in strong energy turbulence as well, and explains the solar wind observation. It's consistent with solar wind observations. At small subproton scales, we have kinetic Alvin turbulence. But weak kinetic Alvin turbulence also seems to be non-local, at least if you just consider spectra which correspond to constant energy fluxes. Energy flux, they are non-local. But what is interesting is that nonlinear dynamics of kinetic Alvin and Whistler modes are identical, meaning that a lot of results which have been developed for Whistler waves can be transferred to kinetic Alvin waves, which is a good result, because Whistler modes actually can be studied for maybe 40 years, and a lot of results are known for them. Okay, I would like to stop here. Thank you.
Uh, this last part, which is about this B power law spectra, Kuznetsov type spectra, it's actually for every such solution, we later understood that there is a whole family. You actually can vary, and this would not help and save from non-locality.
It might help, yeah, indeed. There is a one parameter family of these solutions, and it basically happens because you have to nullify collision integral with two parameters, alpha and beta, and there is only one equation for two parameters. But it's not clear that those different solutions will correspond to a constant energy flux. So we need constant energy flux.
Yeah, constant energy flux, just different configuration of a source, because it's an anisotropic situation, and basically just by varying
you need to match with the source.
Because
yeah.
In a sense, when you look at this solution, it has singularity both at k perpendicular equal to zero and kz equal to zero,
right.
Which means that you are supposed to have source on a plane and on a line. But you can imagine different configuration of sources, and that gives you this geometrical freedom.
That's right.
So actually, we wrote in our book a small half page about it.
I'm just saying that this solution is not realizable.
Actually, since divergence is logarithmic, I mean, have you thought of fixing it by log correction or something?
It's probably possible. We didn't do it. Yeah.
Because after all, your numerical result is not that far off that, right? As I understand. So 2.7, you said?
2.8 thoughts, but observations show 2.7, 2.8.
Yes, and here is 2.5, so it's not really that far off.
Yeah.
Considering the inertial range is not that big.
Yeah, that's why I said corrections, probably corrections help. Yeah.
So, what is effect of condensate on energy transfer process? Because it seems, in simple terms, condensate you could think of as effectively ensemble of zonal magnetic fields. Right, because you have very small k perp and high, very small k parallel and high k perp, and this would effectively make magnetically shear the underlying waves, and so you could have interaction, usual kind of interaction like in zonal structures between condensate and the waves. When does that become important?
So I don't have the slide here, but in fact it's a bit true because. If you just don't consider the condensate, just consider interaction of Alvanic waves. As I mentioned before, only modes with kz equals zero contribute to this interaction. So one of the wave numbers, kz, should be zero. Now, condensate builds up exactly in the same region. So then, if you consider interaction, say, z plus with z minus, you also have to add the interaction of z plus with the condensate. Mm-hmm. So it will definitely affect the energy transfer of both the plus and the minus.
Yeah. Any more questions? No? Okay, then let us break and return at 10 past.
Thank you.